Hello, everybody, and welcome to the LFC Report podcast. I'm your host, Les Lawson, and tonight I'm joined by Tom Keegan and Pete Warburton as we look ahead to Jurgen Klopp's final away game as Liverpool manager when we play Aston Villa on Monday evening. But before we preview that game against Aston Villa, we'll have a little bit of nostalgia. So, Tom, I'll start with you on this one. Do you remember where you were on this night in 1978?
78. Is it the European Cup final?
Correct answer, Thomas.
Yes. I know where I was, Les. I was in Wembley Stadium with the other 77,000 Liverpool fans watching Liverpool versus Bruges.
That's it, Pete. What's your memories of that particular day?
It starts off pretty lucid, to be honest, because we got the special down, me and my mate. And then we got to Wembley Ice Street, and then we were saying, we must have got there about mid-afternoon, I think, on the special. And we were looking around, saying, where can we go? But it's because there wasn't anything like these fan parks, and I couldn't see any pubs open.
And it was a roasted day, wasn't it, Pete?
Oh, it was a lovely day. It was weather like it's been the last couple of days. It was lovely. And this fella said, hey, mate, if you want to go and get a couple of beers, go into Marky's there, Marks and Spencer's, I think it was. And they had a thing at the back. So me and my mate went in and got a few carry-outs, and we just stood literally on Wembley Ice Street waiting for the trains to come in and, you know, see if any of our mates and that. But by the time we got to sort of Wembley and then to go in the ground, it was a bit fuzzy then. My recollections were a bit fuzzy then. I'd had a few beers, but it was great. I remember swapping my tickets. My mates had a ticket for the Terracen, for the Liverpool end. And for some reason, I had the stand ticket. I don't know where the hell I got it from, but I was in the stand. And I said to my mates, I'll try and swap it, see if anyone wants to swap. So eventually, I was asking, and people were saying no. I think they thought it was a bit of a jarg ticket or something. I don't know. But eventually, I went up to this lad, and I thought he was a Bruges fan. I thought it. I think we were in the Bruges end. I thought he was a Bruges fan. And I said, and I was trying to talk to him, so it's pidgin English, thinking he wouldn't understand what I was saying. And I was saying, this ticket, you have this ticket, I have your ticket, and you can sit. And I was doing all the actions, you sit in the stand, and I can go with my friend into the ground so we can stand together. I said, and I was doing all this, and after about 5 minutes of drunken explaining to this so-called Bruges fan, this lad turns around and goes, no, it's all right, mate. I'm with me mate myself. He was a scouter. Anyway, eventually I did get to swap it with someone. Me and my mate went in together. And it was just, as I recall, it wasn't a fantastic game. I think Bruges literally comes to play for penalties and whistle one. But it was just great being there. And like Tom said, there was probably about 70 or 80,000 Reds in the ground. I say we were in the... Yeah, but I think both ends were Liverpool's, to be honest. Yeah.
Tom, were you on the terraces that night as well?
Yeah,
or
I was on the terrace. Do you know where I was, where all that was, Les, and how I got there? I never got a ticket for the game. And I was working in Dunlop's at the time. You know, like, the half fella got me a job because I got married young, and I ended up working in Dunlop's. And I was working in there, and Jimmy Causey, this fella, said to me, He said, I've got a ticket for you if you want for the European Cup final. And I said, okay. He said, the only trouble is you've got to come down to the Western Approaches. You know the Western Approaches in Clochy?
Yeah.
And I paid a little bit over the odds for the ticket. But I remember going into the Western Approaches like this young lad, like I was only 22, walked in there like, and I thought, I'm giving a load of money out. I'm getting the European Cup final ticket. And then we're going to be walking out of there. But anyhow, I got me ticket. And off we went. We went on a coach down with all the lads who speak. And it was like, funny enough, one of the lads who we used to go everywhere with, he died 2 years ago, Gary McCoy. Went everywhere with him. And we were on this coach going down, got off in towards Wembley, but we got there early, and we got the tube down to Covent Garden. and we all went into Covent Garden, like Peter, for a little aperitif before we went to the match. You know? But like, it was a brilliant going down. What made it fantastic, as I said, there must have been 77,000 Reds, because the whole stadium was red. It was just the only other time, Les, I've ever been to a final where it's been as bad as that was Wimbledon.
Yeah.
When we played Wimbledon, and it was exactly the same. But again, like what Pete says about the game, I remember, funny enough, I remember Liverpool having like loads of chances, but not clear chances, because they never come out to play. You just come to defend, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I went down. I wanted to go with my mate to it. Met at the match. Tommy and Dave and his girlfriend, Lynn. But my mum and dad wouldn't let me go because they didn't know them, because I was only 13 at the time. So I ended up going with friends of my mum and dad's on the special from Lime Street in the afternoon. And, you know, that's my first ever European Cup final. As a 13-year-old, couldn't sleep the night before, up dead early on the Saturday, and couldn't wait for us to be getting on the train to get down to Wembley and, you know, get down there. And as I said to Pete before, it was a roasting hot day, and getting there and just walking around, taking loads of photographs, just soaking in the atmosphere. And luckily this time, I had a ticket for the upper standing enclosure. First time I'd ever been in there, because I'd been to Wembley for the League Cup final earlier that year against Notts Forest, but I was in the stands and had a terrible seat, right at the front. But getting me spec in the upper standing on the massive big steps that they had up there, stood right in front of a barrier, right behind the goal where Kenny eventually scored. And as you said, Tom, the atmosphere was just something special. I'd never seen anything like it. Just going in the ground and just seeing red everywhere at both ends, you thought, wow, this is something special. And the first thing I remember about that night is Tommy Smith, who'd had an accident in his garden about a week before the final, and broke his foot or something. And he was walking around the ground to do some TV work, and he got a hell of an ovation from the Liverpool fans. And Jockey Hansen come in, you know, to replace him. And Emlyn was playing left back. And I just remember, you know, Liverpool having total dominance of the game, and, you know, couldn't score. The keeper was making good saves. But as you said, they'd come, basically set the stall out to try and hit us on the break, or try and get it to penalties and take the chance there. But, you know, luckily in the second half, you know, Kenny scored that brilliant goal from a magnificent pass by Suey. You know, and the whole place went off. And, you know, I'm thinking to myself, wow, you know, I'm 13 years of age. I'm at Wembley and I'm going to see my team win the European Cup. You know, and be the first British club not only to win the cup twice, but to retain the trophy. And then if you remember, Tom and Pete, Jockey Hansen plays a dodgy back pass, doesn't he?
He got off the line, didn't he?
And Tomo clears it off the line.
Tomo saved him. Yeah.
Yeah. That was the only attempt that they had. And then, you know, the final whistle goes and, you know, you see Emlyn going up to lift the cup. What a day, what a night. You know, and then it was all back on the specials to Liverpool. We abide in memory, really, you know, coming back with everybody was knackered on the train. But, you know, they were so high on emotion and everything that, you know, people couldn't sleep. And you know, again, I got off the train at Edgehill Station, and there was all the papers were in. There was a guy there selling all the papers. So, you know, about 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm getting off the train and buying all the papers and then going to bed and reading all the papers before I went to sleep. Well, you know, tried to go to sleep. What a day. What's your memories about sort of the end of it, Pete, and getting home and stuff?
I can't remember getting to the station, but we obviously did. We were at the other end. We were at the opposite end to where Kenny scored. As I say, it was mostly Liverpool anyway. I can't even recall little notches of Bruges fans. We saw a few outside, but I don't know how many came over. There couldn't have been that many. But funny enough, coming back on the train, I think because we'd had a few beers, me and my mate, we fell asleep. The head was splitting, to be honest. I think it was starting with the hands over. And I just remember the train sort of, when the specials, the trains used to slow down and it's
Yeah.
coming into stations. And I was sort of asleep with my head on the table sort of thing. And I looked up and I saw these floodlights. And I said, oh, great, this is South Liverpool, we're at Holly Park. And I said, we're nearly home. It was bloody Aston Villa's ground. It was Villa Park, and I thought it was South Liverpool. So we were only halfway through the journey. So I got a few looks off the other lads saying, you swine, you woke us up and we're not even at home, But yeah, I just remember, I don't know what time we got into Lime Street. It was certainly early hours, obviously. And then we got a cab back over the water to Birkenhead. And I can't remember if I went into work the next day because I'm not too sure if my boss got us the tickets. I think that's why I was in the stand. I think that's how I ended up with the tickets in the stand, and then I swapped it. So I can't remember. I was, funnily enough, I was talking to Jean, my wife, at the weekend or at midweek or something this week, and I said, you know what? I wish I'd have kept a diary of all the games that I've been to, home and away. I said, not necessarily match reports and stuff like that, but just to say, like, on this specific day, because I said, I'm sure there's loads of away games, especially, and probably home games, that have just been lost in the sands of time, and I can't remember them. And if if I've had a diary just to say, on May the 10th, I went to Wembley against Bruges, not make a big thing of it, but just to remind me, because, as I say, there's loads over the years. I used to have a box. When I still lived at home, I used to have a box with all my ticket stubs and my train tickets and everything in. And I think as I got to the bottom of the stairs when I was leaving, we bought a house, our first house, when I was getting married. And I think when I got to the bottom of the staircase, my mum already had the decorators in and she lashed it. She lashed it. It was like a cigar box, and it had all the ticket stubs and everything. And it was just memories in this box. And that's one of my only regrets with Liverpool. The other one's not going to Rome in 77. I'd only just started work. And I was a bit meek and mild, and I didn't fancy asking the boss, who was a bit of a tyrant, for some time off. My mate went on the special, but I said, oh, I can't ask. I'd already asked for a week off a family holiday. But one of my other regrets is I didn't keep a diary just to say which games I'd been to,
Yeah,
But
you know,
yeah, it was.
a lot of the games marry into each other, Peter, don't they? Knowing your
Yeah.
thing of the games and you know the places that you went. If you went to a few grounds, if you've been like to Villa Park and places, the amount of times that I've been to Villa Park and lots of
Oh,
games,
yeah.
and you
Yeah.
try to remember. But as you say, it's only the memorable things that stick in your mind.
Well,
More
I
like
used to
what
have.
you said about Kenny. I was down
Yeah.
the other end when
Yeah.
Kenny scored. So I my abiding memory of that is not even what with series pass. It was Kenny jumping over the hoardings, jumping
Yeah.
into the crowd, and just going mental. And
Yeah.
that's the thing that you can remember. I don't even have to see it. I remember him hurdling the
Yeah.
border, like the
And
hoarders.
the other thing I remember, and he was a great commentator, Brian Moore, I think it was, but he pronounced it Saunas for the pass. He pronounced
Sound.
it Saunas. But talking about the away games over the years, I used to have a map up on my wall when I lived at home, and I used to put a pin in all the grounds I'd been to, just like a little thingy pin. And some of the old grounds I remember, like I'd been to Roker and to Bearnden Park and stuff like that. And I remember in this box, I had a full ticket at the South End away in the cup that got called off, and I think it was like £2 or something for the tickets. And you could have got your money back because I couldn't get to the replay because, well, the first
Midweek
game.
on it.
But it would have meant 2 days off work and I couldn't do it. So instead of going all the way to Anfield, I worked out by the time I got the train and the bus up to Anfield and back, I might as well have just kept the ticket. And I had all tickets intact in the box, you know. But some great memories, like.
Yeah. Do you remember your journey back to Liverpool? And did you buy the papers when you got off the train, or were you just sort of
we were just come back on the coach and fell asleep on the coach coming back, I think. It was just all them times. Most of them think it was about coming back. It's great when you come back when you win, isn't it? What you usually find is they took a lot of alcohol and they drank the alcohol going down, but never thought about saving it for coming back, you know. But most of the times it was finished on the way back. So you just slept most of the time. And of course, you know, it's the euphoria, isn't it? You know, when you've been to one of them games and you've won, as you said before, Les, it's like emotional, isn't it? It's even now, I'm 68 years of age in a couple of next week. And I come back from a football match and doesn't matter, even like most of the games that you come back, and I come back from the night match and I'll sit down, make myself a drink, and I can't go to sleep, you know, like for at least half an hour. I have to stay up for half an hour, 40 minutes, because, you know, you get emotionally involved in football, don't you? Even to today, you think it's, we would all talk about what's going to be, you know, like Jürgen's last game, and but imagine how you'll feel coming back from that.
Yeah.
Remember, the worst feeling I've ever had, the worst feeling I've ever had coming back from a football match. And do you know when we played in 2014 on the Bodgers, and we'd gone to Chelsea, and Oh, Kevin and Dad, Charlotte, me, she's now, you know, like she's now nearly 11, and when they brought her to our house, and I come back from the Chelsea game, not after losing 2-0, oh God, I was devastated. You know, when you come in,
yeah,
even our beautiful Charlotte couldn't cheer me up at that moment. So I've never felt so much of a disappointment in my life as that, and you know what I said? I think I've said to you, on numerous times, I think you feel the defeats and with the emotions and everything, because you wonder how many more chances you'll get to see them, you know, win it. I think, you know, now we're going to go through a little period of transition. Even as well as the
that's for day. Another day, Tom.
Yeah, we'll save that for another day. But
Tommy passed his start of the 10 before. So here's your start of the 10, as one Bamba Gascoigne used to say. So Tom sort of, you know, got the correct answer first go to where he was on the 10th of May 1978. So can you tell me where you were on the 10th of May 1986, Pete?
I was at the other end of where I was against Bruce. I was in the opposite end in the big steps.
Yeah.
I was in the big steps. And it was great because we went down. My mate was in the RAF at the time. I went with a couple of mates I used to go regularly with from Birkenhead. But one of my other mates was in the RAF. And he had a mate who was an Evertonian. And they travelled down separately, obviously, to London, and we met them there. And once again, we had tickets, although they were all for the Liverpool end, we had tickets for different sections. And what we were doing is we went down on a coach, and you could either go on the Friday, stay Friday night, and then come back after the game Saturday, or go down Saturday, stay Saturday night, and come back Sunday. And that's what we did. So we went down Saturday morning, and it was pretty much even on the coach, Reds and Blues together. It was good crack on the way down. Met these lads from the RAF, my mate and his mate. But because we were in different sections, what we did, I think there was two of us in the same section. So two of us went in and took the two stubs. One of the lads took the two stubs out And then we got one of the other lads in on the stub, and we did that till the five of us were together. And it was great. It was just, it was, I mean, the night time, we didn't really have a drink pre-match because, as I say, we travelled down and we literally travelled straight to Wembley. We didn't even go to the hotel first. We didn't even know where we were staying until after the game, and it was somewhere around Kensington or Chelsea or something. And then we ended up going up the West End and on the beer. And I mean, I could tell you a few things that went on that night that was nuts, like. But yeah, so I was at the end where Rushy, at the end where we got our three goals in the second half, and obviously the goal from Lineker in the first half. But it was just a cracking weekend. And in fairness, like, as I say, this lad, and I fail to remember his name, unfortunately, but he was a Yorkshire lad who supported Everton, and he came out with us after the game, him and me mates. And then I think they went back to get like the last train out of Euston to go back north, King's Cross to go back north. But it was just a great weekend, obviously because of the result. But it was until the mistake by Gary Stevens when Ronnie intercepted it, and then we just went on from strength to strength then. But there's a few highlights. I'm sure people have seen the bust up between Jim Beglin and Brucey, and I think there was a save off Graham Sharp as well that Brucey made. But it was just a fantastic weekend. And as I say, even after the game, we went up west, and there was a few blues out, and it was great. There was no animosity. Everyone was having a bevy and singing, and that it was really good.
Tom, how did you go to that particular game, or were you lucky enough to get a ticket?
Do you know where I was on that day, Les? I was in Calella in Spain.
I wasn't expecting that answer, Tom. Yeah, I'm glad
no,
you didn't.
You wouldn't. Do you know what? We were in a bar in Calella, would you believe? And we were watching. I remember it for so many reasons. There was no such thing as mobile phones in them days. And we were, what's it called, in the game. We were watching in this bar, and then all of a sudden, we were losing at half-time 1-0, and the bar was full of mixed Evertonians and Liverpoolians, because Calella, it was like, they'd all come in from, they were all based on mainly Scousers. So it was like a nice mixture in the bar. So we were all sitting there relaxing. And like, one, they were beating us 1-0 at half-time. And then they went over on Spanish TV, and there was a cycle race going on. And he said, "We're going to join this cycle race and show you this cycle race, but we'll record the second half of the final." You know, like, so long. So we're all sitting there in the bar, just chilled, like chilled out. Evertonians are singing joyfully, like the match runs on, and he'd recorded the match. Well, nobody knew the score, and you couldn't phone up anywhere or look at a phone or a text. So we were all sitting in the bar on a downer for about 40 minutes, 45 minutes, all the Liverpoolians. The Evertonians were joyous. And like, as the match started, as it came back from half time, we caught the second half. And then, as you can imagine, all the Evertonians have been joyous for the whole of the trip. They were all devastated. We were joyous that day and enjoyed the rest of the day. So yeah, I had a great time in there, Les. I can't remember the name of the bar in Killella, but I was there with Susan and all the family. And you know, funny enough, there's a lad who follows us on Twitter, Dave O'Neill, and he was in the bar with us. But like, I'd met him then many years ago. But like, we've been mates ever since. But like, it's, yeah. So that's where we were for the 1986 final.
Yeah, I went down with the supporters club in Breck Road with a load of my mates, Freddie O'Neill's tours. And we went and stayed on the Friday night and the Saturday night, all travelled down to Wembley together on the Saturday morning, back to the hotel after the game, watching match of the day all in one room, and then back home on the Sunday. But as I say, the game itself was like a lot. There's a lot of things I remember about the game, is that like feeling so devastated when Gary Lineker scored to put them ahead and go one behind, and There was a one of the I used to work for West Everton Age Concern then on community programme scheme, doing the wages. And one of the supervisors, Jan, she was a Blue, and she turned up in our end and was found us somehow just by luck. And she was stood by us for the first half, and she was a Blue, and she was gloating like mad, absolutely giving me loads. And she was saying, we didn't want to win the league anyway. This is the one we wanted. Because at the end of the day, you can say you've won the league. We can win the league another year. But you'll never be able to say that you won the first All Merseyside FA Cup final at Wembley. And I was absolutely gutted. Anyway, the second half started. And as Pete said there, Gary Stevens made that mistake. And Rush equalised. And then not long after, Skippy put us 2-1 up, and she just disappeared. She just completely disappeared. Right. And I was looking everywhere for her, and she was nowhere to be seen. And anyway, then when Rushy sort of made the 3-1 and nearly smashed the camera, you know, that was in the back of the goal, you just knew then that, you know, not only had you won the FA Cup, but you'd done the double. You'd actually done the double. So, which was something that, you know, Liverpool had deserved to do on numerous occasions and never had. And to win the double was an amazing feat in itself. But one funny story was that one of the lads, Tommy Lee, he wanted to come down with us and go with all the lads to the supporters club and just go with all the reds. But he was married to an Evertonian, Sandy. And she was the bitterest of Blue you could ever wish to meet. Anyway, we had to be out of our rooms for something like 10:30 on the Sunday. And we sat that round in reception, and the coach wasn't leaving until about 12:30. So we were sat round just, you know, trying to pass the time. And Uncle George, which that was his nickname, by the way, cracking lad, he's no longer with us, loved him to bits. One of the funniest fellas you could ever wish to meet. He sat round and all of a sudden he says to Dave, my other mate, he said, where's Tommy and his missus staying? So Dave said, oh, in such and such a hotel. So next thing, George goes up to reception. And he says to the girl on reception, can you tell us how far this hotel is from here? So she said, yeah. She said, if you get a taxi, it'll take you about 5 minutes to get there in the taxi. So he comes back over and he says, right, lads. He said, I've just ordered two taxis. We're going to sing the Iadio. We've done the double outside Tommy and Sandy's room, you see. So Dave says, well, we don't know what room they're staying in. So Uncle George says, leave it to me. So we all, these taxis come, and there's 8-9 of us getting the two taxis, and off we go to this hotel. Anyway, nine scousers walking in, all dressed in red and white, right? And the reception's looking at us. He goes over and he says, can you tell us what room Tommy Lee's staying in, to the girl? And she says, I'm sorry, mate, she said, I can't give that guest information out. It's confidential. So George comes over. He says, right, I want £1 each off you. I said, what do you want that for, George? He says, just give us the £1. So everybody's going in. What the hell's he up to now? So we all give him the £1. Next thing, he marches back over to this girl at the desk, and he says, can you tell us what room Mr. and Mrs. Lee are staying in, please? She said, I've told you. You know, I can't give that information. In the meantime, he gets this money out of his pocket, just slides under. He said, what room is he in? And that's yours. So she says, oh, okay. So she says, she gets this piece of paper out, puts it on the top and writes the room number on, and then slides the piece of paper back with the money. So we all get in the lift, go up and knock on the door. George knocks on the door and he shouts, room service. And she comes out, and we were all there singing the I had, and we've done the double. And she was not amused, and she wouldn't speak to Tommy for the rest of the day because she thought he put it up, put us up to it. And poor Tommy was in the doghouse. He had to travel back to Liverpool with her. And I got the blame for organising it, but it was one of Uncle George's better ideas. It was fantastic just to see her, because she couldn't go anywhere, because we were just singing outside the room and she tried to shut the door. And Tommy's in the background laughing, but he wasn't allowed to laugh when he seen her. But it was that was sort of the cherry on top of the cake of a magnificent weekend, that. But to do the double, Tom, you know, what did it... Do you really think that we sort of appreciated what it meant back then to win the double? Or was it one of those things that we... I mean, when you think about it, it wasn't just the double, was it? Because we'd done the double at the expense of Everton. Because that could have been them, couldn't it? You know what I mean?
It was an amazing achievement, wasn't it? We had Tony on talking about that period, didn't we? And the two best sides... In the Premier League, and by a country mile, we had the two best sides probably up in Europe and going through. We had at that period, so you just to win it. I don't think you ever appreciate what you win until years later, do you? You know, like it just comes a win, and like the double or whether we won.
No, what I mean, Tom. What I mean, Tom, is that back then, because we were winning stuff season after season after season,
yeah,
it was taken for granted, wasn't it, that we were going, and that's what I mean. I'm trying to say is, we seem to appreciate every trophy we win now more than we did back then, if you see what I mean. There was odd ones, wasn't there? You know, like Wolves in 76, that was special. You know, Rome 77, and Wembley 78 was special. But we were winning the league so often.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I'd seen Liverpool win the FA Cup, actually being at Wembley. And it was only the third time in our history that we won it, so to speak. So it's interesting, Tom, isn't it, that I actually think that if you'd have asked Liverpool supporters sort of in that couple of weeks leading up to the, you know, to the cup final and the, you know, the last two league games against Leicester and Chelsea, if you could only have one trophy, which one would you want? I think I've got a feeling the majority of them at that time would have said the FA Cup. I don't know whether you agree with that.
Probably, Les, as you said, because as we talked about the other week, the FA Cup was a massive thing at that period, wasn't it? And it's, you know, like, and I think, as you say, for a club of Liverpool's stature, even today, I think our record in comparison to the likes of Man United and Arsenal and Spurs, even, we seem to have lost quite a few, you know, like along the way. And I think we've been in it quite a few times, but like, so you'd appreciate them well. I don't think you, as you said, at that period, and we were winning the league constantly, weren't we? We were thinking that the league was going to be winning it forever. But as you find out in life, everything's cycling and everything comes and goes. But I don't think we did appreciate it at the time. I think we do now, but I think more so because we had a period where we never won as much. And I think, so you do appreciate it. I suppose Manchester City are the same now, Les.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're winning constantly. They take it for granted. They probably, if they do win the league, which, you know, like, everyone seems to think they will, you know, they just take that for granted, whereas anybody else, it's an amazing achievement, isn't it? But when you're winning constantly, you do that type of thing.
Do you think we celebrated, we didn't appreciate it as much as we should have done back then? Or do you think we did because it was special and we'd won the two trophies that only a couple of weeks earlier we didn't look as though we were going to win any?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. Like you say, it was against Everton, and it could easily have been them celebrating the double. And, I mean, that season, going into like, I think Everton beat us 2-0 in the derby in February. I think that was one of the, I think Brucey was going through a little bit of a, one of his mad periods, and he sort of racked. Yeah.
He hurt his arm, hadn't he? And the, don't you remember he hurt his arm in the in extra time in the midweek against York,
Yeah.
when we they hit the bar in the last minute, we could
Well,
have gone
that,
out.
I think that was another one, because I think they had a goal disallowed that was even to this day. I think Alan Hansen and Mark Lawrence said they looked at one another, and it was the big forward for York. I think his name was Keith Baldwin or something, and he got to the ball before Brucey headed it in, and I think that's where Brucey got injured, and the ref blew up for a foul, and they said so. It wasn't a foul, and I think we did start getting a bit of luck our way. I mean, that could have put us out the FA Cup. And like you say, Everton then beat us on the Saturday, and I think also in that season, didn't we lose to QPR in the semi of the League Cup?
I'm
Two
on
own goals. So
Ian.
we had like some funny, some bad luck and some good luck. As I say, the York game would easily have gone against us. But I think after Everton beat us in the February, I think everyone, I'm not talking about Liverpool fans, but I think the media, especially in Evertonians, thought it was on a plate for them to win the league.
You know what
And
the turning point was, Pete, in that season?
go ahead.
Neville Southall breaking his ankle playing for Wales.
Yeah.
They put him out for the season.
Yeah.
And they had to put Bobby Mims in goal. Now, Bobby Mims was a decent goalkeeper, but he was nowhere near. I mean, we all have to admit, that Southall was probably the best in the world at that time. So it was always going to be a step down, wasn't it? And you look at the. You look at the goal that they conceded, against Oxford when Les Phillips scored, to put us in the driving seat in the title race on the same Wednesday night that we were beating Leicester 2-0 at Filbert Street. And as I say, Pete, it would have been, I think he probably would have saved that. So that for me was the turning
Yeah.
point that season.
I think, like you say, it was just the manner in which we actually won it. We were always sort of, we were always second best to Everton, and I think Everton drew. I've watched it on LFC TV a couple of times, the programme. I think Everton drew at United, and we beat Man City at our place 2-0, and we went top on goal difference. But they still had a game in hand there. They still had a game in hand on us, but another turning point was the Watford replay, where we drew at Anfield 0-0, and we got a penalty with about 4 minutes to go. Rushy got upended by the goalie.
Which was a mad decision by Tony Cope, wasn't it,
Yeah.
to dive out because
Yeah.
Rushy's going wide towards the touchline, and Tony Cotton comes flying out and takes
Yeah.
him out corner of the box.
Yeah. And then Jan Mulby scored, and then Rushy got the winner. But it was just, what's the name? There was just certain little turning points. I mean, I went down to a funny, wasn't funny at the time, but I went down to the semi-final at White Hart Lane against Southampton, and we went down on the ordinary, like we went down pretty early from Lime Street, and we were wandering around. I always remember we went in this pub called the Intrepid Fox, which was, I think, around Soho or something like that. And we sort of went in as the doors opened, and we were in there about five or 10 minutes tops, and about 13 or 14 Southampton walked in, and we thought, it's going to go off here. And they came over to us. There was about, I think there was half a dozen of us. They came over to our tables, and they said, "You Liverpool fans?" And we thought, well, we can't really say no. So he said, yeah. And he said, "We've got a spare ticket if anyone's looking for one." He said, "We've got a spare one." Of the lads couldn't make it. I said, "No, we're all boxed up." Anyway, they stayed with us all day on the beer. We had a cracking laugh with them. And we travelled up to White Hart Lane and everything. But the problem I had was I wore contact lenses at the time. And I thought, I'm not going to put my contact lens in at 6 o'clock in the morning. I'll wait till we're near it's London on the train. So I opened my little case of contact lenses, and there was only one in it. So I was actually watching the game through one eye. And I think the fella sitting next to me, I was in the stand at the Park Lane end. I was at the stand above it. And I think the fella next to me thought it was a bit weird because every time I spoke to him, I had one eye shut. But I couldn't see the game properly. I literally had to watch it through one eye. And then as soon as it came off the ground, I just took the lens out and lashed it away. I didn't need it then. But yeah, it was, I think, as I say, just going back to the final, I just think it was the manner in which it was done. Before that, we won the league at Chelsea the week before, and it just all seemed to come together for us, didn't it? But it was, maybe at the turn of the year, January into February, I say, when Everton won at Anfield 2-0, it was going to be an uphill struggle, and eventually we turned it around, yeah.
Yeah, great memories, Tom, aren't they? When you look back and you're talking about them with your mates, it brings back some great memories, a great occasions, doesn't it? And it just shows off our illustrious history. And
yeah,
when you think about it, we've been so lucky to be a part of so much, haven't we? And hopefully, Jürgen has now set the foundations for the future. Where Liverpool can go on and be more successful and win many more trophies over the coming years. But we now move on and we look forward to Jürgen's last away game against Aston Villa at Villa Park on Monday evening at 8 o'clock. Pete, what have you done with your team selection?
Right, it's pretty similar, I think, to the Tottenham game. I've said Ali in goal. I've put Kanase in front of Kwan, so not for any other reason that he may have needed a bit of a break. And I thought Kwan had a decent game against Spurs. But I've gone Trent, Kanase, Virgil and Robbo at the back. Endo, McAllister and Harvey Elias, who was immense against Spurs. He deserves a place. And then I've got Salah, Gakpo and Diaz. Once again, I think Gakpo had a good game against Spurs. They may use Nunes coming on. I mean, they've had that long trip to Greece, haven't they, Villa? Which I know they're obviously disappointed that they missed out on a final place. So I think he might hold Nunes back for the last half hour and hopefully tiring legs in the Villa defence and that, But that's the team, I think, anyway.
Tom, have you got any changes to the team that Peter selected there in your
opinion? I think I don't see many changes in the midfield or the defence. I think what he might go with is Nunes less, and give Nunes a game. I think because I think he needs games, doesn't he, at the moment? He needs to be playing again, especially like at the moment. Although if you listen to what Jürgen said in the press conference, he had a chat with Cody and said, he told him what he wanted him to do, and Cody seems to have done it for him. So you don't really know. But I wouldn't expect many changes from the side that Peter's picked.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that the Kwanzaa will keep his place because he's done nothing wrong, and I can't see any reason why, after having, 8 days off, then he would leave him out and play Ibu, to be fair. Kwanzaa's been probably the find of the season this season. And I just think, he did tire a bit of thought in the last sort of 10 minutes or so, last weekend against Tottenham. So there's a possibility that he could be left out. But I just think with the recovery time they've had between the two games, I just think they will go for Kwanzaa. And I agree with the rest of the team that Peter's picked. I can't see any changes. But it will be an interesting game, Tom, won't it? Because at the end of the day, they're 7 points ahead of Arsenal. Right, and Tottenham. And Tottenham's last two games are against against Burnley and Sheffield United, which is expect them to win.
Mm.
Now, I think Aston Villa have got two games left against us at Villa Park and away to Crystal Palace. Right. And obviously Tottenham's other game is against Manchester City. So if we as I expect beat Villa on Monday, Then all of a sudden, Tottenham are thinking, well, if we can beat Manchester City on Tuesday, then we've got a chance of getting in the Champions League. So I think all the Arsenal fans will be rooting for Liverpool on Monday, especially if they beat United on Sunday, because they'll think, right, if Liverpool win, then there's a bit of pressure on Villa. So it is going to be an interesting game to see. And as we said before, you know, they've had a long trip to Greece. They've come back disappointed after being knocked out 6-2 on aggregate. So it'll be interesting to see how it's affected the confidence and what type of performance Villa give on Monday, Tom.
Yeah, they're on a couple of defeats as well, aren't they, Les? They had a defeat against Olympiacos on their own ground, and then they had a defeat against was it Brighton?
Right, yeah.
And then they had another defeat against against Olympiacos again. So like they're on like a bit of a run of form. I think once you get into a run like that, where you know like you can't buy a win, all of a sudden, it's a bit difficult, isn't it, to get your confidence back? I don't know who they play in the last game. Who did you play in the last game, Les?
You play Crystal Palace away, Villa.
Crystal Palace. See, even that, they're on a bit of form as well, aren't they?
Yeah.
I presume that they've got a better goal difference than Tottenham.
Yeah, they have. But even so, like, you know, it comes down, doesn't it? If we beat them, it could come down to if Tottenham then beat Manchester City. Mm. You know, it then comes down then, doesn't it, to Villa having to go to Crystal Palace and win. Because you'd then expect, Tottenham to beat Sheffield United.
It's gonna be fascinating, isn't it, for that race for fourth? Because like both of them sides at the moment, neither looks like. I think Tottenham are on four defeats, aren't we? And on four defeats,
yeah.
Aston Villa are coming off a lot of defeats, so, you know. So you don't know. I think it's gonna be interesting to see what type of. You know, when you're saying about the team we put out, I expect them to put a couple of kids on the benches there as well. You know, Les. A couple of kids. I think he might give Bacetic another run as well off the bench.
Yeah, he might come off on. I don't think there'll be many kids on the bench because, unless you call Conor Bradley a kid, because, you know, if you look at last week's squad, there was no place on the bench for Tsimikas. So if everybody's fit, I just think it will be the same squad as last week with no Tsimikas involved again. So, Pete, what sort of game are you expecting on Monday?
We're safely in the Champions League and we're in third spec, whatever happens, I think. So if there's any pressure at all, it's on Villa to get a result, and that might play into our hands, really. They do play quite a high line under Emery, and I do like him as a manager. I think he's a really good manager. But they do play a bit of a high line, and that's why I was thinking they might hold... You might hold Nunes back for the last half hour when they've got tired in legs and the lot. But it's, you know, if there's any team that's got to win this, it's Villa must win it, really, like you say, because they're looking over the shoulder at Spurs. And in fairness, I don't think Spurs are going to beat Man City, but you never know, do you? And if they've got another couple of easy games, Sheffield United and Burnley, was it?
Yeah.
You know, the last thing Villa wants is to be going into that last game of the season at Crystal Palace, having to do something down there, because like Tom said, they're in a rich vein of form as well. Mm. I just think the pressure's off Liverpool, and that might help us. I think we can play, you know, without any sort of pressure really on us, and if Villa come on to us, I think we can exploit them at the back. So I'm expecting a Liverpool win, but it's not to be all and end all for us. But it'd be nice to win down there, and then go into the last home game. It's going to be really emotional against Wolves, you know.
So Tom, give us your score prediction for Monday then.
Do you know what? I'll go for 2-1 for Liverpool, Les.
Okay, Pete.
I was going to say 3-1 for the Reds.
Yeah, I'm going. I'm in the same camp as Pete tonight. I'm thinking 3-1 to the Reds on Monday, because for two reasons. I think the Villa will be suffering a little bit with fatigue after the game, last night. And I think Liverpool will be able to take advantage of not having any pressure on them. You know, the good form from last week and the fact that Villa play a high line. So, yeah, I will go for the 3-1 victory for Liverpool. Just before we finish this podcast tonight, Tom, just one quick thought on Luis Diaz. You know, there's reports this week, you know, coming out that, you know, that he's 27 now. If he, you know, if Liverpool want him to stay, they've got to offer him a bumper new contract. I don't think he's overly happy here. So how do you see the future of Luis Diaz?
I don't know. It's like the same with Nunes at the moment, isn't it? There's plenty of stories coming out at the moment about him being unsettled and what's it called, you know. So I don't know, to be honest. I'd be surprised if Liverpool let Diaz go, to be honest. I really would be shocked. I know his dad come out and made a statement, didn't he? But I can't see Real Madrid going for him.
Every time he gets a mic in front of me, he comes out, as somebody said on the Anfield Wrap, eating a bowl of paella, and sort of says he wants to go to Spain. So
yeah. I can't see Luis Diaz. I don't know where he'd go, because I can't see him getting into the Real Madrid side. And I can't see Barcelona being able to pay the kind of money that he'd want. You know what I mean? So you're left with going to sort of Atletico Madrid or you know, like one of the other teams. But
you think Paris Saint-Germain, Tom?
Maybe. But then again, he's talking about wanting to go to his spiritual home in Spain. That doesn't make much sense, really, does it? He's going into Paris because you're going into a weaker league, you know. So I don't know, really. I'd be surprised if he goes. I think I was thinking this the other day. I don't expect a lot of players to be going in the summer. Less. I think you'll find that the players that will go will be the ones that's been mooted to go. I think the likes of Thiago will go. I think. Adriano will go. I think Matip will, sadly, I think Matip will go. I think a big decision might have to be made on Salah. I think whether Mo wants to go, I don't know. But I think a decision will be made on him, a monetary decision. But I don't expect Nunes to go, and I don't expect Diaz to go, to be honest.
Peace. 2 years, Diaz has got 2 years to go on his contract. He's 27. Do you think his performances that he's shown this season deserve a bumper pay rise? Or do you think Liverpool are looking at it and thinking, this is the time to cash in?
There's going to be a few factors, isn't it? I mean, I suppose, I don't know, when will Arne Slot actually become Liverpool manager? How long will he have to, you know? And then we've got the Euros coming up, haven't we? Which I know don't affect Diaz. Is the Copa America's on as well?
Yeah, it is, Pete.
Yeah, so a lot of players are going to be away, aren't they? Even if Slot comes in and sits behind his desk, there's not much he can assess really till they're all back from international duty. And normally that's middle of July, start of July or something. So I don't know. You've got Edwards and Hughes there now, so they may look at it and say, this is the highest his market value is going to be at the present time. I'm talking about Diaz now. This is probably the highest his market value is going to be. And if Arne Slot wants different types of players for different positions, he may want to play a different way. Diaz could be one who may be sacrificed. Whether he's going to get a big bumper pay rise is another thing. I don't know. I don't know how much money he's on now, and I don't know how long term a contract he'd want. But as Tom said, some of the mutterings that are coming out from his camp, you know, i.e. his dad with the sombrero on and doing the tap dance. I don't know. Maybe he'll want to look.
Do you know what? It's not in Slot's interest, is it? Or Michael Edwards or Richard Hughes. You know, like the continuity, aren't they, at Liverpool? I always think that's always seems to be when we look at FSG and what they do, they sometimes they sell big for a player, but they're a continuity club, aren't they? They're not like.
Can I just say this, Les?
Yeah. We finished third in the league. We went to the last five games from the end of the season. We overachieved. So there's not that much wrong with this squad, really. So for a new manager who's going to be coming in thinking, I'm going to make like rapid changes, like what Siri done. And like we're going to change three or four players and, you know, bring in. I think that would be suicide, really. He's going to be looking, you would imagine, and just make a few tinkerings to the side, I would imagine. I don't anticipate like loads of mass signings going out. So really, I'd be shocked if Arne Slot done that. And I think it'd be a really big mistake if we start letting everyone go. Nunes, Diaz, or what? I think it'd be silly.
Can I just ask you to look at this? And I just want your opinion on this, because this is something I've thought about this over the past both a few months about Luis Diaz, right? I think Luis Diaz loves playing football, right? And I will always say that whenever Luis Diaz goes out on the pitch, Luis Diaz will always give 110%. I'll never ever doubt Luis Diaz's commitment to Liverpool, or to commitment to football, should I say. Right. But what I do want to ask you, do you think he embraces playing for Liverpool and has bought in to the culture of the club? You know, and what I mean by that is when you think about some of the other players who've played under Klopp, and for me, all of them are virtually, I'd say 99% of them have bought into what it means to play for this club. I don't get that attachment when I stand on the cop from Luis Diaz as I do from, say, a Sadio Mane or a Bobby Firmino or an Oxlade-Chamberlain. Or, I mean, like, when I said 90, I don't think Naby Keita ever bought into what it was to play in for Liverpool. I don't think Cavalio has yet. Right, but I think when you listen to some of the other players who've come in, the vast majority of them have sort of bought into the culture, bought into the history of the club. But I don't sense that with Luis Diaz. I think he would have the same. Luis Diaz reminds me a little bit of Rafa Benitez, whereas Rafa just loves football. Like when he went to Everton, he just wanted to manage football, and I think. If Luis Diaz got the chance to go to an Everton or a Manchester City or a Manchester United, I think he would go without a second thought. And that's not diminishing him in any way, but that's just the feeling I get about him.
I don't know, Les. He's Colombian, isn't he? You know, like a lad from Colombia is not going to have the same, you know, by incident. And we don't know. You really don't know. He's a quiet, unassuming kid, isn't he? He's not like he's not a fella that goes like doing loads of interviews, or, you know, like he's a private lad. Some people are just quiet, aren't they? And don't wear their hearts on their sleeve, you know, like, and things like that. So I don't know. Like, you know, Nunes is full of character, because, you know, like what you see with Nunes is what you get. But I think Diaz is a more quieter lad. And maybe I'm wrong, I don't know.
It's all about the opinion, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you look at footballers now, after Fernando Torres, I love Fernando Torres, Les, like everybody. I bought into Fernando, really. And like when he left Liverpool Football Club, I looked at footballers in a totally different light from that day. I think all of them lads, it doesn't matter who they are, you know, Alisson Becker, who, you know, like whoever who comes into Liverpool, at the end of the day, it's a job to them lads, you know, and they don't.
You bit the nail on the head there, Tom. And I think that's what I was trying to say. Is a thing to Luis Diaz.
It's a job.
Right. Yeah. And he does, and he he would have the same feeling if he had that job at any other club.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas I do believe when you listen to likes of Virgil or Ibu or Robbo or Alisson, the way they've bought in to the culture of the club and what it means to them to have played for Liverpool. I think they see it, yes, as a job, but as more than a job, if you see what I mean. Because I think they've bought into it where I don't think Diaz has necessarily. What do you think, Pete?
I'll be honest, I can't ever recall hearing an interview with Luis Diaz, but I don't know if his English isn't too good. I mean, you can put Nunes in the same brackets as that. I'm not sure if his English is coming on. But yeah, there's, like you said, there's certain players you know from day one, and they suddenly become a Liverpoolian, don't they? And you can look back over players that have left the club over the years, and if you hear them talking or read any interviews that they've done, you still say we as a Liverpool. You know, they are a Liverpoolian. You know, the likes of Michael Thomas, who we all know what he did to us for Arsenal, but then he came up here, scored in the cup final, and I think he still lives locally in that, which you're not going to get with the foreign players, admittedly. I think with quite a lot of the players, not just at Liverpool, but everywhere else, it is a job of work for them. And, you know, without saying that they're mercenary in any way, but, you know, they will. You know, I mean, we all knew when Luis Suarez came from the Netherlands to here, it was going to be a stepping stone because ultimately he wanted to play in Spain. Now, that could well be the thing for Luis Diaz. It could even be for Nunes at some stage. But, it's like every walk of life. You've got different personalities and all jobs. You know, there's the cocky, loudmouth type. There's the very reserved, shy type. There's the studious type and stuff like that. So, I don't know. As I say, I think it's going to be an interesting summer because, as I say, literally from a week on Sunday now, we're clopless, aren't we? We haven't got Jürgen anymore. I don't know as to what the dates are going to be is when the new regime come in, and it's going to be interesting, especially as I say with the Euros and the Copa America, if players are going to be away on duty. So there's going to be a lot of rumour and conjecture over the summer, but like Tom said, I can't see us selling too many for whatever reason. Even if Arne Slot's got a different sort of format in mind, I'm sure with all the young kids and that we've got and the squad that we've got, we can utilise players in all them positions. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting, but obviously the rumour mill is going to start and it's going to be, you know, I, for one, I'd like Nunes to stay. They're already saying he was in Barcelona last week, so he's going there and putting two and twos together and hopefully getting six or something, you know. But like Nunes to stay because I think, I was talking about Jack earlier on and he sort of smiled when I said it and said, yeah, it's not the same thing, Dad. But I remember when Thierry Henry came over from Juventus to Arsenal and he was firing blanks left, right and centre and it took him a while to settle. So, but like our Jack then said, he said, well, this is going to be his third year, Dad. He's got to start, you know, he's got to start doing it. But saying that, he scored a few goals and quite a few assists. But I'd like the likes of Nunes to stay. I'd like Diaz to stay. But I think the new manager, whatever, will like to freshen the squad up. I think there will be faces come in.
Yeah, I mean, I would think that of the forwards, I would think that Diaz is the most likely one to go. Mm-hmm. I think that I don't think he's particularly happy in England. I think he'll always give his best if he stays. But I think this summer is sort of lying in the sand time for Luis Diaz. He'll either want to bump a new contract or he'll want to go. And I think of the five forwards, I think Diaz is most likely one to go. That's just my opinion. But it will be, as you said, lads, it will be an interesting summer. You know, and there'll be speculation left, right and centre. And, you know, a lot of it will be bullshit. And, you know, a very small amount of it will be true. So we'll just have to wait and see what unfolds as the summer progresses, as we get used to life without Jürgen. Anyway, on that note, we'll end this edition of the LFC Red Poets podcast. Thanks to Tom and Pete for joining me tonight. As you always end the podcast by saying, justice for the 97, don't bite the sun, and you'll never walk alone. Until next time, see you soon.